G'day, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seth Coe.
I'm Kevin Mason.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Magnew.
Hi, it's Grant Hackett here.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Smith from the Wallaroos.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gassidian, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yes, you are indeed listening to another podcast of Not the Footy Show. And as usual, we've got another great guest lined up for you and two topics under discussion. I'm Ashley Morrison.
I'm John Lee.
And our guest on this show is the South African captain and hockey player, Austin Smith, because they are have qualified for the Olympic Games once again. They didn't manage to go to Rio because the Olympic organization said they weren't going to send them. Now that they're still trying to raise the funds so that they can actually go and attend the Olympics and also have a camp. And we'll hear from Austin about all the problems that they are facing to actually get to Tokyo.
And, looking forward to it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a strange one, this Tokyo Olympics. And I mean, that's what I was going to touch on here.
Let's kick it off.
Yeah, I read this really good article about, in the New York Times, and it was just looking at, you know, the whole games going ahead and the decision that they're going to push on and try and make this happen. And it, a couple of things that came up that I thought were really interesting was, and it was saying how one of the things that Japan is looking to do at the moment is portray the games as a symbol of triumph over the 2011 tsunami and also the nuclear disaster that happened in Fukushima, which is, of course, where the torch relay has just started. Now, you know, it's interesting that they're trying to sort of promote all of that and just finding it kind of really difficult at the moment to get the public on side with that. The other thing then they were talking about was how the IOC has basically, you know, made its money in the past by selling the broadcasting rights. And it was saying how they stand to lose perhaps even more than Japan if the event is cancelled. So they were, you can see why everybody's trying to make it happen. But again, they're saying there's now a $3 billion has gone again on top of the budget for Japan. And as I think I said in an earlier podcast, you know, they were saying one of the, I think it was Goldman Sachs, were saying that they fear that Japan could move to a second tier nation in terms of its finances with the debt they're going to have from these Olympic Games. And you just think that's not good for a country's economy. And the other final thing, John, on this is they were saying that there's the matter of China. And I was like, what's the matter? Of course, China and Japan have had a massive rivalry for a long time. And of course,
that's an understatement.
Well, I was trying to be polite and, but anyway, we'll move on. We're not talking about that now. But he was saying how the Beijing Winter Olympics, you know, are less than a year away, and Tokyo wants the bragging rights to be the first city to host a post-pandemic multi-games event. Of course, if that didn't happen, then China most likely would be able to boast that. And so there's all these little things that it's not just about the games anymore. And I think we've got to wake up and realize it's no longer about the sport. And it's very sad because the Olympic Games have become such a behemoth and there's so many other things going on in the background. And I think those other things are the things that are killing what it was all about.
Yeah, it's been travelling down that road for a long time though, hasn't it? I mean, we can't expect the Olympic Games to stay the same as what Coubertin thought it should be.
No, there's no chance.
You know, and they world had to changes. Evolve. Yeah, it has to evolve. Has it evolved in the right direction? Is it devolving?
Well, I think you've got to look at when it started to go off track, in my opinion, was when it went professional. I think in 92 was the first Olympic Games where people could openly be paid. Now, we know that some were in other countries at other previous games, but...
Is that the first American Dream Team game?
Yes, it was, yeah. And to me, that's when it started to sort of go off the rails. And I think also if you look at going back to that time, if we go actually before that, in the 70s, you had a lot of the sports started creating their own World Cups. So, you know, football or soccer had theirs obviously starting back in 1930, but then in the 70s you had cricket. I know it's not an Olympic sport, but they created a World Cup. You also had hockey created its World Cup in the 1970s. Then by the end of the 80s, if you look, nearly every sport, John, had a World Cup. And so suddenly you go, well, did the relevance of the Olympics start to fade then? And then, of course, the Olympics tried to catch up by being professional. But I just think that, to me, is the turning point, is around that time.
And you think about it, probably a lot of these sports, like a cricket would saying, well, these other sports have got the Olympic Games. We're not in the Olympics. We've got to come up with something that's the commensurate of that.
Yeah.
Or the same as that.
And I think the problem you've got now, I mean, and I've asked several people, which means more, to be able to say you're a world champion or to say you're an Olympic champion? And it's quite interesting, depending on what nationalities you talk to, you get very different answers.
Yeah, I would have thought that, say, in the sport I play, that it's been the Olympic Games has been the big medal. World Cups, oh yeah, they're great, but it's not an Olympic medal. How that will change in the future with the direction that hockey takes and its way it represents itself at the Olympic Games is another question, because that's up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think if it goes to fives, which is the rumour, then it won't be worth anything. An Olympic medal in fives won't mean anything compared to those who've been fortunate to win previously in 11 aside the traditional form.
I'm starting to think that, I am now of the opinion that the Olympic Games is not a hockey, it doesn't rate as high as the World Cup because it's not a hockey tournament. It's a multi-sport tournament, and it's not organised by us, and it's not run by us, essentially, although it's hockey people that do actually run the events, etc. But I'm not sure what the sport actually gets out of it, except for every 4 years being able to say, oh, well, this team's the gold medalists. And let's face it, an Olympic gold medal is a myth, in the sense of what it brings to you as an individual. Sure, I'm not trying to drag down the idea of what that achievement is, but all of the outside ephemera of what that medal will bring you is just that's a myth. That's a complete myth. And very few of the sports people that win a gold medal actually become superstars. Not Usain Bolt. He's an outrider. Don't use him as the level for everybody else. And gold, bronze, or silver, they're all as equally amazing to achieve that, but they don't bring you worldwide riches or international glory and fame.
What I would say as well attached to that is, again, I think the reason they don't bring you the worldwide glory and the fame anymore is because there are so many. So what has happened is, you know, we've talked about how many events there are now in swimming. When you look at back in Dawn Fraser's time and why we still refer to Dawn Fraser, because there were very few events then, and you had to be damn good to win a medal with so few swimming events. Now there's so many events. I mean, Mark Spitz again, you look at him, and nobody moved the schedule so that he could actually compete in finals. He had to go from the pool, get a rest, towel off, and then get back in the pool. Yeah. And I mean, whereas who was it? They recently moved the event, didn't they? So that the American guy, I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, Phelps.
That's it. Could actually go for 7 or 8 medals in the same games. Now, you know, you look at that, and then I think the problem you have as well, John, and going back to what you just said, is years ago it used to be the Olympics were televised. So for a sport like hockey, that was often the only time you saw the sport on TV.
Yeah.
But now, again, it gets squeezed in between all these other events that are at the Olympics, and you might not, well, you won't see a whole game, because, I mean, I know the last Olympics, you struggled to watch a whole game because they'd go off to something else during it.
I stayed up and watched the 2004 Athens gold medal, and they cut away from that match at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was here in Australia to go to look at something else for a few minutes. So,
and that's what I mean. So, again, you look at it and you... So that may be one of the reasons why the sports or the actual athletes don't get the kudos or that they used to have, because you don't get to see that whole moment.
And I think it's an important time to reflect on what the Olympic Games should be. And it is too big. It's too huge. Nations it costs you a lot of money just to hold these games. And they do need to be slimmed down. I don't say we get rid of them, but I think there should be some sort of restructuring of the Olympic Games and what they are meant to be. I mean, breakdancing comes in. Everybody laughs about it. Oh, yeah, they're not really a sport. Yeah, big joke. You know, what if they get 50 million viewers?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a joke for the IOC then.
Well, it's like the esports, you know, the amount of views that gets. I mean,
and that's huge. What it's boiling down to. It's about views now. It's not about competition. It's not about providing the anything for athletes, it's about getting bums on seats in front of television screens or tablets or iPhones or whatever they happen to be watching it on.
But you know my idea. I mean, I've said that I think what they should do is have an Olympic year. So still every 4 years. But what you can do is you can have, you know, a city in Croatia host an event for 2 weeks. And then the caravan moves on, say, to Paris. And another event is held there. And then we move to China for the badminton. So all throughout the year, there is the Olympic Games happening, but it is happening around the world. And if you think what it was meant to be, it was meant to bring the world together. And I think that's the only way it can be affordable. TV stations would like it, and you would actually have that bringing everyone together. Now, okay, there's going to be no closing ceremony. There's not going to be the big bonk fest that there normally is. But, you know, you've got to pay a price for the survival of the games, and somehow they've got to remodel it. They've got to change it. I'm still stunned, as you said, that, you know, Brisbane is bidding for it. I find it unbelievable.
I think it's become too big for the window that it allows itself. That's for certain. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem with the broadcast of it, is you've got so much crammed into such small space. And if you're an Australian or any other country's television head honcho, and you're sitting there and you've got three sports on, and one of them is gymnastics, it's going to be gymnastics that goes on TV. Because that's the one that people watch. My mum doesn't know anything about gymnastics at all. She doesn't hunt it down. She doesn't read about it. But tell you what, if it's on during the Olympics, she's bang in front of it.
Yep.
And that's, that. You know, she's not watching hockey. Anyway.
Now, well, just to back up what we're saying in that article from the New York Times, and I actually circled this bit and brought it with me, and it says, whatever the outcome of the games this summer, they could have profound ramifications for the entire Olympic movement, which has relied for decades upon an idealized promise of inspiration and civic pride to support enormous expenditures and increasingly onerous demands on host cities.
Well now, said.
Absolutely. On the nail.
Yeah. And I love Olympic champions. I love anybody that's gone and competed at the Olympics. Don't get us wrong in this, oh, we're just bashing the Olympics and we don't believe it. That's not true. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying if the Olympics wants to survive,
it has to change.
It has to change, and change dramatically. And there's other sports associated with the Olympics that if they want to survive, they're going to have to look at divorcing themselves from the Olympics. Because one of the problems with our sport is we're stuck in a 4-year bloody funding cycle that just goes round and round, and we're caught in that trap of the Olympic cycle. And there's some sports that have got to break out of that mindset if they're going to be successful in the future, because if they stay where they are, they will die.
Yeah, and going back to my concern with Tokyo, if it goes ahead, is why is it going ahead? And is the focus going to be on the actual sporting events? I think there's so many things going on in the background that with the sport has become secondary, and it's almost irrelevant. It's not, but it feels like that, because it's all about national pride for Japan. It's all about money for the IOC. It's all about survival for the IOC. And that, I don't know, it sticks in my craw a bit.
The people who are most affected by this are the athletes, because they've been sold the 4-year cycle of the Olympics. So to take that away from them now is an absolute cruelty. It's terrible. But it may very well happen. And maybe it will open up some eyes to the fact that this 4-year cycle so many sports are locked into is actually a crock, and we've got to break out of it.
Shop the latest in hockey technology at the Republic of Hockey. The Republic of Hockey is a new emporium of hockey equipment and apparel, with a mission to provide you with everything you need, both on and off the pitch. With a team of knowledgeable hockey enthusiasts on hand, the crew are ready to help you find the perfect gear to suit your playing needs. Head to www.republicofhockey.com.au to shop online or find the nearest store near you.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe, and you're listening to Not the Footy Show.
Okay, well, it's time for our special guest on this podcast, and it's very pleasing to have him on again. It's been a while since we caught up with him, and that is the captain of the South African hockey team, Austin Smith, because they are having problems once again, having qualified for the Olympic Games, of actually getting there and being able to compete.
Austin Smith, welcome back to Not the Footy Show.
Hey, Ash, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I think the last time we spoke, I just got out of hospital up in Malaysia after a touch of dengue fever.
Sure, those are some dark days in that hospital. At least I had my teammate was also infected, so at least I had some company. But I'm glad to be speaking to you today in full health.
Well, absolutely. Now, the reason we're catching up with you is because obviously the Olympics are not that far away. The South African men's hockey team have qualified once again, but you're busy now trying to raise the funds so that you can actually get to Tokyo and play. Now, what's the story? Maybe you can give us the background to the situation.
Well, yes, you said we've qualified. So, yes, we've qualified. So that was the first step. And we've met our Olympic Association's criteria. So we've been given the green light to go. But the big challenge that we're facing at the moment is, the extreme lack of funds. We haven't got a title sponsor to help with our preparation. And obviously with the COVID scenario, that's made it really difficult for guys to fly in. So we haven't actually been together for over a year now. So we haven't trained together for quite some time, and that's making it difficult. And now we're in the situation where it's getting so close to the Olympics and we haven't got anything planned that we've decided to try and take things into our own hands. And that's why we've launched our crowdfunding campaign to try and start, to try and get the ball rolling and really take control of things ourselves. We can't always rely on our hockey association or our Olympic association. They're understaffed. They're doing the best that they can, but ultimately we're trying to, keep things in our control.
And I mean, the hard thing for South Africa is, of course, your exchange rate. You know, it's like the rand is struggling a little bit at the moment against all the major currencies around the world. So suddenly your costs have actually gone up in local terms.
Yeah, that is a challenge. I often, because I've been living in the Netherlands for such a long time, I often forget that when we're raising money in general, we're raising money in rand. And yeah, the costs can then fluctuate quite dramatically. It's not always something that we have control over. It's not like we're suddenly upgrading to a 5-star hotel, but the price makes it look like we are. But I can guarantee everyone listening that we aren't going to be in any 5-star hotels. All money donated will be put to good use.
Now, I mean, I remember when we spoke before, you were saying that the South African players within Europe were managing to cross borders and they were meeting up to train together, those of you that were there. But I would have thought, as you touched on there, this time you can't even do that. And I would think your colleagues in South Africa, they're not even able to train together as well because they're not all in one city either.
No. So the last thing that has happened really is that in South Africa, we've had some regional high performance camps, but only regional. So in the main hubs, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, guys have been getting together there to have a sort of like a selection weekend. But even that was really under like stringent controls and regulations. And here in Europe, we're still holding thumbs that we can get together in April. But again, with the numbers kind of almost all over Europe are heading back up again, COVID-wise, it doesn't look like it's going to be possible to get together. So yeah, in the past, that was something nice to do. And it gives you a really real boost when you are on your own in a country, it's sometimes pretty lonely, and just to get together with some of your teammates, it's a great feeling. So I think we're all missing out. We actually had a call this morning, though. We had a Zoom call, a European Zoom call this morning, which was good fun. But yeah, it's not quite the same as actually being out on the field together.
No, and I'm sure it must be very hard for you guys because, again, you qualified through the FIH's qualification process for the Rio Olympic Games. But then South African Hockey Association had done a deal with the South African Sports Confederation and Olympic Committee that unless you won, was it the Continental or the World League? I can't remember at that time. Then you weren't going to be allowed to go. There was going to be no funds for you to go. So you actually met the FIH criteria, but then your own confederations chose for you not to go. So that must have been a really bad blow. So to find yourself where you are now, it must be doubly bad for those of you who've been there twice.
Yeah, it is. And it's tough because after the 2006 campaign where we had qualified, and it wasn't it wasn't made exactly clear what criteria we needed to meet. So it was a little bit of a shock when we got the news that we wouldn't be going. Everyone was a bit surprised because nothing had really been explained clearly to the players. And yeah, for a lot of players, that was the end of their career. For some players have carried on, but to end on such a sour note for players who've been training a long time with the dream of attending an Olympic game, like most athletes have, it was, yeah, it was quite a kick in the teeth. And for some of those players who were involved in that process to now be in a situation where they're really struggling to get the funds to have a good preparation so we can actually go to these Tokyo Olympics and give a good account of ourselves. Yeah, it's a mental challenge, but I'm glad that we're actually trying to do something for ourselves and we're not just sitting back and waiting for a sponsor to suddenly appear. And we're actually going out there and we've got quite a few initiatives. We're trying to work with schools. We're trying to do things in our own little areas. Guys also based in Europe. And I hope at least we can pull something together so we can arrive in Tokyo with at least some preparation. And those guys who have been dreaming about playing in the Olympics will actually be able to enjoy the experience and not arrive home with a high debt. That's also a concern for a lot of people. You don't want to get back after such an amazing event and then have this massive downer of, oh, now I still owe the uni a couple hundred thousand rand.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look back 4 years ago, do you feel, because there were certainly people, I think, in the hockey community that felt that the IOC should have stepped in or that the FIH should have even gone, the International Hockey Federation should have gone to the IOC and put pressure on your Olympic organization to say, hang on, these guys entered the qualification process with your okay. They met the criteria, they qualified. So really you should be sending them. Do you feel that more should have been done then with hindsight, or do you think that was just unrealistic?
Yeah, in hindsight, I would have loved that if the IOC had stepped in and laid down the law. But also thinking back, I'm kind of grateful that it didn't go the complete opposite direction and the FIH said, well, because you've kind of pulled out at the last minute, you're not even going to be in contention for the next Olympics. I mean, something like that could have also been possible because I think I was a little bit embarrassed, to be honest, as an African player, that the fact that no African team was represented at the Brazil, at the Rio Olympics. And that was, I think, was a real shame that not all the continents were there. And I'd be pretty cheesed off if I was a player from Egypt or Kenya or Ghana, one of the other countries that would have had an opportunity. We kind of took that spot. And then I think we ended up giving our position to our qualification spot, New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken. So that was, for me, yeah, even more of a downer. We're really trying to make hockey a bigger sport in Africa, and there are a lot of good initiatives there. And for that to have happened 4 years ago really didn't help things at all.
Could you watch New Zealand playing knowing that they had your spot? I mean, they made the quarterfinals and very nearly made the semifinals. I'm sure all the South Africans were like, no!
It was pretty heartbreaking to see what Germany did to them in that game. Yeah, it was difficult watching the Olympics in general. It was kind of nice in a way to be able to see a lot of the Olympics. When you're competing, you don't actually get to see much of what's going on. So it was nice to watch. But yeah, I'm not sure how many times I said in the back of my head, oh, it would have been great if I was there. Like, oh, we actually should have been there. That was a tough summer.
Now, it's interesting. One of the things that you've said several times while we've been talking now is about trying to find sponsorship so that you guys can prepare properly. Now, the Olympic Games obviously doesn't allow any sponsorship on the shirts. Do you think now that obviously the way the COVID pandemic has affected sponsorship of the Olympic Games in that the monies have been reduced, that we may now see that change, which could be a huge benefit to some teams like South Africa, where you could have a sponsor on board and you could actually wear their name on your shirts during an Olympic Games? Do you think that would be a positive change?
It definitely would be for us. That's the thing a lot of sponsors don't understand, that when we say, yeah, we're trying to raise money towards our Olympic campaign, I think they can only be involved up to a month or two before the Olympics, and then they can't actually advertise that they are involved with the team any longer. So I think that would be something that would definitely help, especially developing countries who, yeah, sponsorship is always a struggle for those types of countries. Yeah, perhaps the IOC goes down the route of putting some of the major partners on players' kits, and we could get a cut of that. I don't see that happening because I can imagine The Japanese have already made a huge loss on this event, which is also tough for them. So it seems like someone's going to lose out. And at the moment, it's us.
No, look, I understand. But I think maybe down the track, it's something the IOC needs to look at to make the Olympic Games viable for everybody. Because it's really sad. And I mean, if you look at South Africa, and I did the Women's World Cup, I was commentating that. And again, the team from South Africa had only got together when they got to London. And you could see them improving game after game. And this is the problem you guys face. South Africa is an incredibly talented sporting nation. There's a passion, there's a drive, there's a desire, but it's getting those games, getting that exposure. And at the moment, it seems in the hockey world that you're really restricted and your chances of improving are just so limited.
Yeah, so that's a huge challenge. I hope with the new point structure that the FIH have launched, that they will give us a slightly more opportunity. But again, the big thing is you have to be playing games to get points. And for us being, a little bit like you guys in Australia, you're far away from the action, and to play other quality teams is a good trip. And and it's expensive. So that's difficult. And not being involved in some of the big competitions like the Pro League is also very limiting. So I often think, even if we did have funds, would we be able to climb up the ranking? Even that would be a huge challenge if we're not involved in some of the bigger events.
I mean, the hard thing is though, now, as you touch on there, your tyranny of distance and being able to play those games, you may not get the opportunity to play. And if other people are playing games where they can pick up world rankings points, your world ranking could drop down through no fault of your own, which seems incredibly unfair.
Yeah, I mean, we took a knock even after the Olympics, having qualified. There's a position. Yeah, even if you finish last in the 12th place, you still gain ranking points for having qualified. So we took a little bit of a knock there. Mostly I think it's a shame because it doesn't, in my opinion, give a true reflection, like you said, of the passion and the desire and the talent that we have at a young age. And I think it's a shame, but it's also been kind of the main reason why I wanted to continue playing, because I still think with a bit of investment and a good structure for 2, 3, 4 years, we could really make a good step in the right direction. I think in 2012, we performed exceptionally well at the London Olympics, and we were kind of on the cusp of doing something special. And then, 4 years later, you see how a setback of qualifying but not going to the Olympics, it has a lasting impact, especially when junior players don't see your country at the Olympics. It suddenly becomes just a little bit less special. So that was a shame. Obviously, the players who missed out actually attending themselves, but for all the juniors who were watching and hoping to see their heroes on the television, that was a real shame.
Well, as you said, the good thing is now you're going back into the schools to try and inspire the next generation that comes after Tokyo. You're trying to raise this money. I saw a figure of 3.5 million to 5 million rand, which that might sound scary to some of our listeners, but when you do the exchange rate, it works out at around 307,000 Australian dollars to $438,000. Now, we've got a lot of South Africans living here in Western Australia, living in Australia, who may be listening. If they wanted to get on board, how can they get on board and help you guys?
Yeah, obviously, at the moment, we're looking for any sort of donation. So we've had heaps of small donations already, which, when you think of $10 here, $10 there, it doesn't make that much of a difference. But because we've already got so many people joining in and giving small amounts, it's actually starting to make a huge difference. So it's been really positive. We've only gone live for about 2 weeks now with our campaign. And if anyone heads over to any of our social media accounts of the players, they all have it in their biography. They have the details there where players can donate. We've partnered up with a firm called Matchkit, and their website is matchkit.co. And if people go onto there and they find the South African hockey team, they can donate through that. So it's a great platform, and they've been very generous to support us at no charge. So they're helping us. But basically, if you go into the players' social media profiles or the South African men's hockey social media profile, the links are there. And like I said, any amounts will be very gratefully received.
And just to clarify, I know you touched on it, you're not going to be going out having five-star dinners or staying in five-star hotels. I mean, what would the money be going for? Presumably, it's just transportation for training and sort of stuff like that, I presume.
Yeah, we're not at the top echelon where we're looking to trying to pay players. To make it clear, we're looking to raise funds so we can have a preparation camp and a series against Namibia in May in South Africa, to play against Malaysia in South Africa, to go to the Aslan Shah tournament, and then to at least be in Japan before the Olympics for kind of a week before. But to give you an idea of the people that we have involved, our entire management team have been for quite some time working on a completely voluntary basis. So it's actually incredible when I see what our manager or managers are doing. People who have donated their time to help us with sponsor initiatives, our coaching staff, our medical team, especially our medical team, because there's heaps of work being done in the background with all the extra restrictions. So all these people are doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. Players like myself who are based overseas, we're paying for our own international flights to get back. So basically we're just looking for funds to get us to a camp and to pay for the basic things. We're going to be staying at friends, at relatives' houses when we play these series. So we're purely looking for, yeah, that figure of 3.5 to 5 million rand is, yeah, the pure basics.
I mean, it is actually, in a way, as sad as it is that here you are, an international team ranked 14 in the world, that, you know, is struggling for money, struggling to get to the Olympic Games. It is unbelievably heartwarming and refreshing to hear that the passion, the desire, the will is still there. People, despite that, they're not throwing their toys out the cot and going, this is too hard. They still want to represent South Africa. They still want to fly the flag. And to me, I just find it's what the ethos of the Olympics was all about striving to be the best, but giving your all to get there and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that's really warmed my heart is the way that the hockey community in South Africa and the extended community have really got on board. People are messaging, yeah, sorry, things are a bit tight at the moment, but here are a couple of ideas, or I've sent your message on to these guys who are doing really well at the moment. So it's been brilliant to see the amount of support that we've received and the amount of people that are really behind us, like yourself sending me a message saying, Ozzy, can I help out? Can I help spread the message? So, yeah, I think that's for me, that makes hockey so special, that there are so many people that, yeah, want the best for the sport, and no one's egos are too big to think, no, they must sort it out themselves. Everyone, even got the opposition here, trying to help out. So, yeah, I think it's great, and it's just pure enjoyment and a love for the game and passion for playing and representing your country.
Well, just before we let you go, I mean, just looking at when you, let's be positive, you are going to get to Tokyo and you are going to compete. But I mean, you've got a pretty tough group with Belgium, Great Britain, the Netherlands, Germany and Canada. But if you finish in the top four, you are in the quarterfinals. So you've just got to jag a few results, don't you? And then anything's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge believer, Ash, in anything is possible. And yeah, we all know that there are some epic underdog stories out there in the past. And the good news is, because we've played so few games, no one will know what to expect. So we will be an unknown factor going to the Olympics when we get there. And yeah, like you say, it just has to go your way on the day. And who knows, we could be speaking after the Olympics, hopefully without dengue fever this time, and talking about an incredible underdog story. Who knows?
Well, we certainly hope so. We wish you and all the team all the very best, and we'll be watching with great interest and definitely sharing the link so we can try and hopefully generate some support for you all. But thanks for your time again, Austin.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to see you again, Ash, and great to chat to you. And thanks for having me on your show. Thank you.
This is Gary Lineker, and you're listening to Not the Footy Show.
Well, that was Austin Smith, the South African hockey player, currently playing, of course, in the Netherlands. And you no doubt heard the problems that their team are facing. But fantastic that so many people, including the coach, giving up their time free of charge to try and make this team competitive. I get really upset, John, because, as I said there, I was at the Women's World Cup and you could see the team improving with those games. But they didn't get together before they actually arrived in London. And you just think, South Africa is such a proud sporting nation, and you just think if only somebody could give them that financial support or the structure that they could actually be together, train together, prepare properly, they would be, I think, a very strong team globally. But of course, then the teams at the top would never want that to happen because that would mean one of them would have to drop down.
Yeah, that, unfortunately.
But I also think in hockey,
isn't that the way things go? Isn't that just how it works?
How it's supposed to work, yeah. But I think hockey needs teams in Africa to rise up as well.
Oh, it definitely does. Absolutely. I mean, what was that you were talking about, that article from the New York Times? They quote something like $900 million being spent on coronavirus.
Yeah. It was, I've got it here somewhere. $900 million in spending on measures to combat the virus when the athletes get there.
So you don't reckon the IOC could find $250,000 out of $900 million and back the athletes? Do you not think that it's incumbent on the IOC, perhaps, to go to South Africa and say, we give you all of this money to get your sporting teams to the Olympics. Why are these people not being sent? What pressure is the IOC putting on all of this and the FIH? Because they're funded. They get that funding from them. What are you doing with our money? Where is it going? Why are these athletes having to try and crowdfund to get to the Olympic Games? Because that's why we give you that money.
Yeah, I think it's really sad. You sort of think, well, why put them into the qualifying process if they can't compete? And it just is all round the wrong way. I mean, just you mentioned there the
crowd. Or is it a way that the South African government can get money out of them to do other things with the money? Because that's happened before in South Africa. Don't worry about that.
Well, just to remind you, if you want to donate, you can go to matchkit.co. That is the site where you can find any of the players and you can donate to the fund. And they are, it's a scary number, 3.5 to 5 million rand. You think, oh my word, that's a lot of money. But it actually equates, because the rand is really struggling at the moment, to 307,000 Aussie dollars to 438,000 Aussie dollars. So it's not a huge amount of money. It's still a lot of money.
Not in the realms of no. 900 million to make sure people don't get COVID. And in the same breath say, oh, you don't have to have a COVID injection before you get there.
Yeah, but look, I wish them all the very best, and
that's
I hope they can get
a lot of face masks. You know, that's a hell of a lot of face masks and hand sanitizer.
Sure is, but we wish the South African team all the best, and hopefully they can get the funds and they can compete.
Yeah, and looking forward to seeing them there.
Yeah, and as I said, John, with the quarterfinals now, you've really just got to hope someone jags a draw in with the big teams when they come up, and if you can win your other games, you could get into that fourth spot in the pool, and then anything can happen.
Yeah, let's not talk about that draw and the way that works out, shall we?
Nah,
it's only going to end in tears.
Yeah, you'll get upset. Okay, we'll move on.
While we're on this subject, because of the Tokyo Olympics, the pandemic, what is the post-pandemic sports world? What effects is it going to have on sport? Obviously it's going to change the way the games broadcast. Games are broadcast. We're already seeing it now with remote commentary. Still, even when the opportunity is there for it not to be remote, still being done remotely. And how do we organise ourselves internationally? How broke is it going to make certain sports? How much are we going to be hindered by the financial impact of the sport?
It's interesting you say that because again, like a lot of this remote commentary, the viewing figures, I believe, on a lot of sports where, you know, obviously sport thought they had to keep going and it would be really good, but it's actually damaging it that people are walking away and they're not watching it. They're saying, I can't stand watching it without a crowd. There's no atmosphere. And they're also saying, you know, that the remote commentary is and I'd have to say some of the things I've watched, it's soulless. Like you realize how much the crowd helps the commentator. And I know, having been in that position, it really does help you. When there's great atmosphere, it lifts you and you get involved in it as well. So I think that's an area that, although it's going to be a massive cost saving and everyone's going, it's working really well, I still stand by what I've said for the last couple of years, is that some sports, yes, you can do it that way. Others, I don't think you can. I think you actually need to be at the venue. But we'll see.
One thing I've noticed, is that you can tell whether they're there or not, regardless of how hard the commentator tries, because they'd start talking about stuff that have nothing to do with the game. Because when you're at the game, there's lots going on outside the field of vision of the camera. And that's what commentators pick up on. And the energy, as you so yep. said, they definitely pick up on all those things. But they can, there's things going on all the time for them to talk about and blah, blah. When you're stuck in front of a TV screen and all you can see is what's on there, you've got to start making stuff up to fill the rest of the time that, because it's not all 100% ball by ball. And it's really easy to pick them up now. You can just tell because they're not talking about stuff that's happening on the ground.
Yeah, and you can also tell the ones who haven't done any homework or not enough prep. Yeah. I mean, exactly. Cricket's a prime example of that, where you'd be told the bus is going past the outside of the ground, or, you know, there's a plane just flown overhead, but you're not getting any of that because they can't see it.
Yeah.
And I mean, with a sport like cricket, when it's being broadcast, to me, those little noticeable things add to the whole broadcast and the atmosphere and the storytelling of the game as it unfolds.
Well, you know, you've got one, you've got your special commentator there, and he's noticed something down there on the bench or something behind the goals, or he noticed something, but the way the commentary is now, they don't. They only talk about what's happening on the screen, which is all they can talk about.
Yeah. I mean, the other question you raised there was, you know, what will international competition look like? And I think people thought, oh, COVID, we'll see it all condensed. I think there will be a change in attitude towards international competition. In some respects, I hope we see in some sports less.
Yeah.
Because definitely. I think so, make the internationals more special. So it is only the really big events. So everybody's excited. Whereas I think sometimes if you play too many games, you know, it's like with football when they had international friendlies, and they get awarded an international cap for a friendly, but then they're allowed to make 7 substitutions. That to me is a farce. That should never be a full international game,
no.
And regarded as a full international cap. Unless you're playing it under the rules of the sport at the highest level, then it should never be an international cap that gets international recognition. So I would like to see in some sports that condensing and having less international games played.
I would see that as a byproduct of the pandemic, not caused directly by it. And when I mean byproduct, I mean because of the financial implications of what has happened with the pandemic. Some sports just aren't going to be able to afford to run programs the way they ran them beforehand. And in some cases, that might be bad, and in other cases, it'll probably be good for them. Do we need endless international games of any sport?
No, I don't think so.
You know, that's we recently saw GB play Ireland, the women
in hockey,
three test series, which was the Irish were all over it, promoting it left, right, and centre, and GB hockey couldn't have given 2 squirts by judging on what their efforts were to promote the game. Now, these weren't capped games, I'm led to believe. There was no caps awarded. So essentially they were friendlies. Well, 2 sovereign nations playing a friendly? I don't get that as a viewer, as a follower of sport. Imagine South Africa and Australia playing a rugby union
friendly.
Or practice game, as they call them. Some, you know, we've seen India playing international practice games. Oh, please. And don't remember that part of the reason they had to call these games practice games is because they're tied into a competition, the Pro League, that says they're not allowed to play games against other nations while they're competing in the Pro League. So they have to call them practice games, and you don't get a cap for them. I mean, get angry at that. It's just, where's the sanctity of that top highest level of competition that you can possibly play in? That is, the elitist of the elite is playing for your country. And when you dilute that market, no one's interested.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And if you go in and look at cricket and what they've done, you know, you talk to most cricketers, test match is what they want, a baggy green or an England cap to play test cricket. Now, the one-day internationals, yes, we've got players that are specialists for that. But now you've got T20. How many T20 games they play now a year is ludicrous when it was always meant to be just a bit of fun. Now there's more than that. I think it was over 300.
It was meant to work underneath professional test cricket or international cricket. It was meant to work as a club style thing or franchise model where players could make money. It was all about giving players the opportunity to make money outside of that national level of the game.
Yep.
And now it's all about playing it at the national level of the game, unless it's the Indian Premier League.
But then you still look at it, and I mean, I'll be honest, I couldn't care two hoots if someone got an international T20 cap. If they were representing our country or, you know.
Well done to the athlete if you do.
Yeah, look, fantastic, but I'm sorry, I would never hold you in as high esteem as if you were playing in a test match. And I'm a traditionalist, but I just think to play at that level in a test match is something special. And what they've done is they've diluted the sport again because there's so many games now. And I would like to see cricket go back to when they had tours that went on a cycle. So everybody knew, okay, the Ashes happened this year, they'll happen again in 3 years' time. And then in between, India and New Zealand would tour, and then the other year. But at the moment, nobody knows. Again, nobody knows who's playing who in the zoo anymore.
Let's look at perhaps one of the richest sport in the world, basketball. How often do they play internationals at basketball level?
Not that often.
Not that often. Why? Why do you reckon they do that? Because A, they understand the sanctity of what the club's side of the lower levels do. And they also understand that if you play Australia versus USA every second week, no one's going to tune in and watch after a little while.
The value of it goes.
The value of it's gone. Yep. So how often does Australia play as a basketball team? You probably get a handful of games every year if it's not a tournament for an Olympic qualifier or World Cup qualifier, which are 2 week tournaments. They just don't play international basketball.
Yeah, no, look, and I think that less is more. To me, it makes the fans want more.
Yeah.
And they're prepared to then pay the big dollars for the tickets as well.
Yep. I mean, no band releases 5 albums every year. Do they?
No, they don't. Some you wish they didn't release any.
But anyway, we'll leave that. But they have flooded, in some sports, completely flooded the market. And then you've got other sports like tennis that grimly hang on to this idea of nationality meaning something. Don't they? And yep. Formula One's a classic for it. How am I supposed to, I'm happy Daniel Ricciardo is an Australian. He's competing and he races well. And I sort of back you, Daniel. I'm keeping interest in you because you're Australian. But when you win, it's not an Australian victory because your chief engineer's from Holland. The bloke who changes the tyres is from Scotland. You know, they're not international. It's not, but they tie these people to flags and it works as them for a marketing tool.
Well, the America's Cup is another one, isn't it? Oh. Where, you know, when the Swiss won, it was a New Zealand crew.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I agree. I think when they do stuff like that, it makes a mockery of it.
Hey, just before we go, because I'm probably just about out of time. China, Japan. Okay, I'm not sure exactly how we can talk about this, but we've got a situation where there are many countries, there's many people or organisations lobbying for a boycott of the Winter Games in China. And maybe Japan might be angling to get the Winter Games as well. When was Nagano? Well, it wasn't that long ago.
They'd have the facilities.
The facilities would be there. That, you know, just throwing that out there, maybe. But what do you, you know, what are your thoughts on the idea that we should be boycotting the Olympic Games? We've seen one boycott in our lifetime.
More than one, you know?
Well, one major boycott.
Well, 80, and then 84, of course, none of the Eastern Bloc countries went to Los Angeles.
No one noticed. Did they? Did anybody notice?
Oh, I think there were some events you did notice.
Oh, all the athletic ones, all the weightlifting ones, all
gymnastics.
The gymnastics ones.
Water polo would have been.
Oh, yeah, water polo.
So,
is it the place of outside ideological interests to be determining whether a sporting contest goes ahead?
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like sport being used as a political tool. But
it's being used by a political tool by the Chinese.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't like it. I'm a sort of dreamer in a way. I like the beauty of sport, that it should be pure and it should be about the competition. But I think, again, John, you know, I've never been in that position where I've had to personally make that call. Would I compete because I don't agree with, you know, something that's happening? So I think you have to look at each situation as it comes and basically live with your conscience individually, whether you want to.
Fair enough. I mean, when I think about it, China's in some ways a very smart place to hold events like that. And when you consider that they will go all out to make sure that everything is smickety-boo, it will be very well run. The facilities will be fantastic. Where do you draw that line within your own mind of what's acceptable and what's unacceptable?
But of course, you probably wouldn't have this discussion if we went with my plan for the Olympics, making it be in all these cities around the world over a year. Suddenly that wouldn't become such a big issue, and you could just say, if, you know, there was a military coup that cropped up somewhere, you just go, well, we're not going there. But you're not killing the whole event and all the events that are part of that event. You know, that sounded terrible, but, you know, all the sports are not going to suffer because of one thing.
No, true. Good chat.
Some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now.
See ya. We'll be back next week.
Shop the latest in hockey technology at the Republic of Hockey. The Republic of Hockey is a new emporium of hockey equipment and apparel with a mission to provide you with everything you need on and off the pitch. With a team of knowledgeable hockey enthusiasts on hand, the crew are ready to help find the perfect gear to suit your hockey style. Head to www.republicofhockey.com.au to shop online or find a store near you.